Walk the length of the North 40 at Whitman Regional right now, this week, and you're walking past thousands of airplanes that somebody built in a garage. Composite canards, riveted aluminum, fabric and steel tube. Every one of them wearing that little word on the airframe. Experimental. I'm Vector, and this is Cleared Direct here on Radio Hangar. Air Venture is happening as we speak, July 20th through the 26th. And I want to talk about the most audacious thing that word experimental has ever produced. Because one of those home-built airplanes, born from that exact same world you are standing in this week, flew to space. Let's break this down. Before we go further, this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey, in your pocket, built to last. If you have ever wanted something with a little more weight than a logbook endorsement, take a look. AviationSoul.com. Now, the airplane, its name was Spaceship One. It was designed by Burt Rutan and built by his company, Scaled Composites, out in Mojave, California. And on October 4, 2004, it climbed past the boundary of space and won the Ansari X Prize, $10 million for the first privately built crewed vehicle to reach 100 kilometers of altitude twice in 2 weeks. That is about 62 miles up, roughly 328,000 feet. No government. No NASA. A team from the experimental aircraft world. And here is why that matters to you. Standing on the flight line this week, Burt Rutan is not a stranger to Oshkosh. He is Oshkosh back in 1975. Rutan rolled out a strange little canard homebuilt called the Varies at this very fly-in. Pusher prop. Winglets. A wing on the tail and a small one up front. It looked like nothing else on the field. Pilots crowded around it the same way they crowd around the eVTOL demonstrators and the electric trainers in the innovation hangars today. That airplane, and the long as that followed, made Rutan a legend in the home-built community. Thousands of them got built in garages. The same composite molding techniques. The same lay-up-your-own-fuselage philosophy that Rutan taught a generation of amateur builders is the direct ancestor of the vehicle that flew to space. Here's what most people miss. Spaceship One was not built like a spacecraft. It was built like an experimental airplane, hand-laid graphite composite. A cabin that never pressurized in the traditional sense. Windows that were just double-paned portholes. It came from a hangar, not a clean room. So how does an experimental airplane get to space? Let's walk the systems, because this is where the engineering gets beautiful. Problem one, getting off the ground, rockets that launch from a pad have to carry enormous fuel just to punch through the thick lower atmosphere. Rutan's team said, let's skip that part. So Spaceship One did not launch from the ground at all. It was carried up under the belly of a twin-boom mothership called White Knight, a carrier airplane. It hauled the spaceship to about 50,000 feet and then dropped it like a bomb release, high above most of the atmosphere air launch. The same idea behind a lot of the reusable flight work happening today. You use a wing to do the cheap early work, and you save the rocket for where it actually pays off. Problem 2. The rocket motor Spaceship One used a hybrid, and this is a genuinely elegant choice. On one side, a tank of nitrous oxide, laughing gas, the oxidizer. On the other, a solid rubber fuel grain, basically a case packed with synthetic rubber. Neither one does anything dangerous sitting by itself. You cannot make the rubber explode. You cannot make the tank explode. Only when you open the valve and let the nitrous flow across the burning rubber do you get thrust. That is a much more forgiving beast than a liquid rocket with two volatile propellants sloshing around next to each other. For a small team, hybrid was the smart, honest engineering call. The pilot lit that motor and pulled the nose straight up. 80 seconds of burn. The airplane went supersonic in the climb, punched past Mach 3, and then coasted the rest of the way up on pure momentum, engine off, into the black. Now problem 3. And this is the one I want you to really sit with, coming back down. This is the part that kills spacecraft. When you fall back from space, you're a rock with tiny wings accelerating into thickening air. If you come in at the wrong angle, you either skip off the atmosphere or you burn up or you tear apart. The space shuttle solved this with a precise re-entry attitude, a specific angle held by computers and thousands of heat tiles, and very little room for error. Rutan looked at that and asked a different question. What if the airplane could not get the re-entry wrong? What if stability came for free? His answer was the feather. Picture a badminton shuttlecock. You can throw it any way you want, sideways, backward, tumbling, and it always, always swings around and comes down nose first. Cork down, feathers up. It is aerodynamically self-correcting. high drag, dead stable, no skill required. Rutan built that into the airplane. The entire back half of each wing, plus the tail booms, hinged upward at the top of the flight out in space where there is no air to push against. The pilot raised the whole tail section to about 65 degrees. The airplane folded itself into a shuttlecock. Then it fell, and no matter how it was tumbling when it hit the atmosphere, that feathered shape swung it belly down and held it there. Enormous drag slowed it way down, high up, where the air is still thin and the heating is gentle. The airplane essentially could not enter wrong. Rutan called it carefree re-entry. Then, once it was back down into the lower atmosphere and slowed to a sane speed, the pilot lowered the feather, and the tail locked back into a normal configuration. And now it was just an airplane again, a glider. It came home and landed on the same Mojave runway it took off from. Dead stick like any other experimental after an engine out. The data tells an interesting story here. That feather system meant the pilots, Mike Melville and later Brian Binney, did not need a supercomputer flying the re-entry for them. The shape did the work. That is Rutan's whole philosophy in one mechanism. Do not add complexity to manage a danger. Redesign the thing so the danger cannot happen. So that is the promise. Now let me be honest about the cost, because I will not sell you the shuttlecock without the caveat. That same feather mechanism is at the center of the darkest chapter of this story. Spaceship One became the blueprint for a larger vehicle. Spaceship Two, built for Virgin Galactic to carry paying passengers. On October 31, 2014, during a powered test flight, the co-pilot unlocked the feather too early, while the vehicle was still accelerating through the transonic region. The aerodynamic forces deployed it against his intention, and the vehicle broke apart. The co-pilot, Michael Alsbury, was killed. The pilot survived. The investigation by the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, did not blame the feather concept itself. It found that the design had relied on a single human action, unlocking at a moment where a single human error was catastrophic, and that there was no system to prevent that mistake, a lack of a safeguard. The very thing that made the system elegant, its simplicity, also meant there was nothing to catch a slip at the wrong second. That is the tension in all of this experimental world engineering. The lean team, the clever mechanism, the willingness to skip the heavy institutional process, it gets you to space on $10 million. It also means the margins that a big bureaucracy would have insisted on are sometimes the margins that are missing. Both things are true. The feather is genuinely brilliant, and the way it was implemented cost a life. An honest pilot holds both of those in their head at once. So, what is the timeline, and who is carrying this forward? Spaceship One itself never flew again after it won the prize. It hangs today in the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum in Washington, right between the Spirit of St. Louis and the Bell X-1. Think about the company it keeps, Lindbergh's Ocean Crossing. The first airplane passed the sound barrier, and a home built from Mojave. Virgin Galactic went on to fly the larger version, and after a long, difficult road, it is carrying private passengers on suborbital hops today. The air launch idea, wing does the cheap work, rocket does the rest, shows up now in orbital rockets dropped from carrier aircraft. The hybrid motor concept lives on in several small launch programs. The DNA is everywhere. But here's the thread I want to leave you with. Standing where you are this week. Every piece of this, the composite construction, the canard aerodynamics, the willingness to try a wing that folds like a shuttlecock, came out of the amateur-built experimental world. The same world that fills these Oshkosh hangars, the same category stamped on the little RV in the home-built camping area and on the electric demonstrator drawing a crowd near the innovation stage. AirVenture is where that culture gathers and shows off once a year. It is not a nostalgia show. It is a working demonstration that a small team, in a hangar, with a good idea and permission to fail, can still do things the giant institutions said were impossible. Spaceship One is the proof, hanging in the Smithsonian, that the ceiling on the experimental category is not the sound barrier. It is not 50,000 feet. It is space, my thanks to the National Air and Space Museum's records on Spaceship One. And to the NTSB's report on the 2014 accident. For the details in this one, you can find more from the show at RadioHangar.com. Next time you walk past that little word on an airframe, experimental, remember where it can lead. This is Vector. Go look at the home builds.